We're going to continue our series on joy today, finding joy in the midst of life struggles and the confusion we experience. So we're going to continue our study of Philippians, and today's the 17th. So we're going to look at chapter 1 and finish it, and I entitled it Joy No Matter What. Next week we're going to start chapter 2, and it's All in Your Mind is the title of that message. And then we'll finish chapter 2 on the 31st, that's getting to know you. Then we'll dive into chapter 3 as we start November, and it's the joy of trusting Spirit. And those are all the messages I could fit on one slide, but that kind of gives you an idea where we're going. So today is October 17th, the year of our Lord, 2010, and we're going to look at Philippians 1, chapter 12 through 30, joy no matter what. And I put an overview outline on the top of the back of your bulletin. And the first chapter of Philippians you could summarize as joy in suffering. So the first blank that I'm asking you to fill in is suffering. There's joy in suffering is what Paul talks about. And we're going to talk about that more. And then we're going to start into chapter 2 next week. And that's, you could summarize that whole chapter with the joy in serving. And so serving is your second blank. And then the third chapter is the joy in believing. So believing is your third blank, and the easiest one to spell is chapter 4, joy in the Lord. And that's the easiest one to spell, and I'm going to go over those. So hopefully when we're done looking at the book of Philippians, we'll have a general idea what each of the four chapters have to do with. So as we introduce this message, what is the highest source of pleasure in your life? What gives you the highest source of pleasure? What is it that fulfills and satisfies you more than anything else in the world? What is it that gets you to say, gosh, I just love doing this more than anything else? Think about it. If you imagine a box that could hold one thing, one value, or a person that represents the primary driving motivation of your life, what would be in that box? What would you put in your box? I know folks that this morning they got up and they put on Harley Davidson boots and Harley Davidson jackets, and on a beautiful day like today, what they're going to do is go ride their Harley Davidson. And you'll hear them and see them. But I know people that's the driving force of their life is to get to ride that motorcycle. And their whole life revolves around motorcycles. I have known people who their driving force in life is their children. And I've experienced the wonder of grandchildren and how great experience that can be. And how your grandchildren can be the primary thing in life. There are some of us that our marriage relationship is the primary driving force in life. It's my husband or it's my wife. There's some of us that are in medical crisis. And the primary driving force in life right now is to survive. And to win the battle against cancer or physical pain in certain areas of our life. And it becomes the primary thing. When you have this constant companion of pain, it begins to dominate your life. There's been periods of time in my life when I became a believer when the primary driving motivation for my life was to make disciples. That's what got me out of bed every morning. That's what kept me up late every night. That's what consumed my day. There's been other times in life where there's been motivations like making money. Maybe that's the primary driving force in your life. I know people that what they do every day is try to acquire enough money when they get to retirement age that their standard of living stays the same or increases when they retire. And that's the primary driving force of their life. I've come into people's homes recently, and the stock market is on three televisions in three different places. And what's going on in the market and with their investments is the primary driving force of life. So there's a lot of them. What is yours? You may say, well, I don't know. All I do is I get up and go to work and, you know, I make the meals and I clean the house and I go to work and I burn the leaves and I don't know. But there is something. Now, is it important that we're clear about what we put in that box? Oftentimes we don't think about what is the primary driving motivation of our life. But in the scope of eternity, it would be a good thing to understand because that will influence life. What you put in that box will influence your motives. If your primary motivation in life is children, that'll change the motives in your life. If the primary drive of life is to make money, you will say and do things to acquire that wealth. How you invest your time. You can look at how you invest your time, and that will probably give you an indication of what that motive is in your life. You can look at your end-of-the-month expenses as you and I track where we spend our money. And that will give you an indication of what is important in your life. How you treat other people will make a difference in what it is that drives your life. What you use for your finances, and most importantly, the space you give to God. If the primary motivational force of your life is anywhere similar to Paul's or Timothy's or the Philippian church, the time and space you give to God will be amazingly different. Like I invited you. Even if you didn't buy the book Crazy Love, if you'll just sit and watch the 8-minute and 22-second DVD of him starting his life anew, afresh, that morning that they made the video, it will change some things that you think about in the space that you give God. So, joy is knowing Christ personally and comes from depending on His strength rather than our own. Joy does not come from outward circumstances, but from inward strength. So, here's the first of many blanks to fill out in your outline. Instead of asking why, ask what. Instead of asking why, ask what. When something happens to us, why do we say why? But have you noticed that when something happens, you say, well, why is this happening to me now? You know, why is this happening to me? Do you do that, or am I the only one? And then you, after a while, you try to figure out, was it my parents' sin that caused this in my life? Was it my own sin that caused this? Why is this the way it is? I have a constant companion of pain in my life. And many days I ask myself, why does that hurt so much? What did I do? What is it that I didn't do that I should have done that, but, you know, it causes it to happen. And then, you know what comes next, don't you? I don't deserve this. Isn't that the way it happens? And then you get discouraged, and then you get disappointed, then you get disgusted, then you're no fun to be around at all. But that's what happens when you ask why. What if, Hewlett-Packard used to have a commercial that started that way. What if? What if we asked God, number one, now what? Rather than why, what? Now what are you doing? Right? In Philippians chapter 1, verse 12, now, Paul says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. When we're thinking about Paul here, he is in Rome, in prison. He is chained to a Roman guard 24 hours a day. Now, because he's a Roman citizen on the first of his two imprisonments, this one is pretty good. He gets to stay in a really nice place, and he gets to have visitors. He's not in a dungeon, but he is chained, literally chained, to a Roman guard 24/7. So, did Paul realize that his current circumstances weren't as important as what he did with them? See, it's not why I'm in chains or why I'm in prison, but what am I going to do with them? He realized that. And if you and I would learn from Paul, it would change our life. So we could ask, now what is God doing? Is your next blank. What is God doing in this circumstance in my life? Some of us in the medical issues that we're in, or some of us in the financial stress that we're under. You know, the newspaper came out yesterday with the increases in property taxes that we're going to pay. I saw that in the paper, but I didn't spend the time to hunt my name down today because I didn't want to come to church with a bad attitude. You know? But my taxes went up. They sent me a notification letter. They say, you can't fix your house and not have us charge you more taxes. If you let your house go to pot, we won't charge you as many taxes. But if you're a good steward and you take good care of it, we're going to charge you more taxes because, all right, Lord, what are you doing with this? Right? What's God's purpose? Is your next blank. See, there's a purpose in everything we do. Mr. Chan in the front of that video has an excellent illustration of a couple passages of Scripture that he explains to us God's purpose. See, there's not just a purpose in my life throughout my life. There's a purpose for my life today. Not just on Sunday, but every day there's a purpose for what's happening in my life. The next one is, now what does God want to show me? What does God want me to see about His goodness, His kindness, His love, His patience, His creativity? I've come to the conclusion that God can't help but create stuff. I was watching the sunrise this morning and I'm thinking, wow. Yeah, he just makes that stuff. He can't seem to help himself. But make... You know, I cleaned up all the leaves in the yard of the church and the parsonage on Thursday, and I drove up this morning and I told my beautiful wife, well, looks like I could clean up some more leaves. And then I walked up, and we got the fall decorations out front, and the Lord has just strewed all these beautiful colors in with our attempt at fall decorations. I mean, he just does an amazing thing with the colors. And within the next few days, all of the colors of the trees are going to be at a peak around here. So if you can sneak away and get a trip, a ride to look at some of these things, or even on your way home, you know, if you're paying attention, there's some beautiful colors. What does God want to show me in these colors? What does God want to show me in this season? It's not just, oh, it's another fall, another year, time to rake the leaves, time to burn the leaves, time to clean the garden. Right? There's something He wants to show me. Are you looking for it? Now, what does God want to do through me? What does God want to do through me is your next blank. See, God amazingly has designed His church to be the primary salvation of the whole world. Think about that. He designed a system to save the whole world from eternity in hell, and He chose you to do it. Now tell me that's just not comical. God wants to save the whole world, and He wants to do it through you. Through me. But He does. Are we actively looking at what do you want me to do in this situation to further the kingdom, to think more in kingdom mindset than world mindset? What is it you want to show me about how much you are so loving? What's the purpose you've got for me in this situation? My car didn't stop here and not run by coincidence, right? I'm not in this line waiting for my cup of coffee with these people by accident. There's something you're doing. So, like Paul, you and I can look for ways to demonstrate our faith in bad situations. When there's more month than there's money at your house, like there is at mine this month. It's not a good situation. No more money is going to come in. Unless God does something spectacular, which normally He does. But how do you demonstrate your faith in Him in those situations? Even if it's just you and your wife. Even if it's you all by yourself. How do you demonstrate your faith in these situations? In Philippians chapter 1, verses 13 and 14, Paul writes, "As a result, it's become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. Because of my chains, most of the brothers in the Lord have been encouraged to speak the word more courageously and fearlessly." So here's Paul chained to these soldiers, and everybody understands why he is. Did Paul have a captive audience to present the gospel? I mean, these guards were in four-hour shifts where they're chained to this guy. If he wanted to go to the bathroom, guess who went? If they had to go to the bathroom, guess who went? If they were going to eat, they did it together. Paul had this captive audience, and he said, "How cool is this? I got this guy, and I'm a minister of the gospel to the Gentiles. My purpose in life," his driving purpose, "was to present the gospel to the Gentiles and to allow Christ to live through him in a way that people could see it." That was his determined purpose, to share the good news of the gospel with the Gentiles. And here he's got these Romans chained to him. How cool is that? Did Paul realize he could accomplish his life goal anywhere at any time? Sure. See, when we look for setting a determined purpose for our life, we should set one that can't be manipulated by people and circumstances. If you decided, for example, your determined purpose was to present the good news of the gospel and to allow Christ to live through you in a way that you look different than the rest of the world. See, there's nothing that could stop you from doing that. Even if a Muslim's got a gun to his head and says, "If you don't confess Allah, I'm going to blow your brains out," you still have the opportunity to accomplish your life goal by glorifying Jesus in death. So pick a goal, a purpose in life, something that you put in that box that can't be affected by situations and circumstances. See, God can change your obstacles into opportunities. Opportunities is your next blank. It's not a roadblock. There's an opportunity here. See, God's Spirit moves like water. And whenever water comes up against something, what's it do? It either goes through it or goes around it. Or it gathers enough of its H2O friends that they go over it. See, the obstacles that come into our life are opportunities. Don't look at the obstacle. Don't ask, "Well, why has this happened to me?" It's what? What do you want me to do with this opportunity, not this obstacle? Your next one. God can change your setbacks into what? setups. See, what he's doing is he's setting you up in this obstacle, in this situation, to experience him and to do his work and to let him do that through you. So it's not a setback. It's a setup. And you got to look at it that way. When I went to Texas for my stem cell infusion and those massive doses of chemotherapy, I had people praying that I would meet somebody to share the good news with that I wouldn't have met any other way because of that. And things started out pretty good that way. When the chemo got really bad and I got really sick, I kind of lost that. And I'm disappointed that I did, but I did. I got to looking more at the obstacles and the setbacks than I did the opportunities and the setups. And I regret that, and I repented of it. And I've got a determined purpose that in these activities that my life has to have because of the sickness that's in my body, that I'll look at those for opportunities, not as setbacks. But God set me up. He's let me be in this medical situation with this technician or this doctor, and I have an opportunity to be a witness. Now, how do you think Paul would finish these statements? First one, my life is about sharing the good news of the gospel, isn't it? And my mission is to go to the Gentiles. I don't fear death because I've run the race well. Because I've stayed on mission. I've stayed on focus. I've stayed on track. I'm not afraid of dying because my life has been set apart to glorify Jesus and to experience His life. Now, what can you do to stand up and fearlessly contend for the gospel? Let's get it personal. What could you do? Because a lot of time we don't share the gospel. We don't contend for the good news because of fear. And it's not fear of having a Muslim shoot you in the head. It's fear of being embarrassed or being rejected or being ridiculed or... So, what could you do to stand up and be fearless? See, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have any fear. It's just going to be less. Real heroes realize that they're scared. They just don't let it control them. They just do what they have to do anyway, even though they're scared. You know? So, when you do that, is it an encouragement to others seeing the way you live your life? When you actually live the life of Christ through you, does that encourage other people around you? It does, doesn't it? And we need to be an encouragement one to another. Your second point is, so what? So what is your second? Philippians 1:15 through 18. It's true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so in love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, I will continue to rejoice. So, Paul could have become depressed and discouraged and disillusioned, couldn't he? But he didn't. Why? Because the good news was being preached. So, do you have difficulties accepting a situation you're in life? Where you are in life, the age you are, the experiences, are you having difficulty accepting where you are? Do you resent where God has placed you? I've met people in the past week that resented the fact of who they were married to and how much money they had and what the economy was doing and what people were doing and trying to do to them. Is that you? Does God want you to serve Him faithfully and joyfully? He does want you to serve Him faithfully and joyfully. And He wants you to do that in the station you're in and where He's placed you. It's not like He's going to make it all better and then you do it. You do it joyfully and thankfully and faithfully now where you are. And I'm going to confess to you, it's not the easiest thing to do, but that's what we're called to do. So, what will this matter 100 years from now? When you're looking at some of the things in your life, 100 years from now, is that going to make any difference? As Chan said in chapter 2, is anybody going to even remember you were here 50 years from now? So when you think about what's going on, try to think about it. What is that going to mean in terms of eternity? What is it going to mean in terms of eternity? So when you're figuring out what you're going to put in that box, what is it that motivates you? What is it you love more than anything else? Don't pick something temporal. Pick something eternal. And make that the motivating, driving, determining force of your life. That it'll make a point in eternity. So, what is it really most important right now? What is really the most important thing right now? Could it be this eternal purpose of sharing the good news of the gospel with Gentiles? Let's face it, not many of us are going to get to do that with Jews. If you do, do it. But most of us aren't. You're going to get a chance to share the good news of the gospel if you do with Gentiles. So, that's what's really important. It's not how you win or lose. It's how big of a body count goes to eternity with you. Take as many as you can with you. Share the good news. Now, the ultimate joy is the next section. Paul's whole purpose in life was to speak out boldly for Christ and to become more like Him, more like Jesus. Philippians 19 and 20 in chapter 1. For I know that through your prayers and help given by the Spirit of Jesus Christ, I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be embarrassed, but will have significant courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ and to die is gain. So what? If. What if? Number 3. What if? Philippians 1:22. If I'm going to go on living in this body, then it will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far, but it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in faith, so that through my being with you again, your joy in Christ Jesus will overflow on account of me. Whatever happens, conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Think about that. Whatever happens, conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Jesus. This next week, will you look different than the world? Will you conduct yourself in a manner that's worthy of Christ? Will you really look like a little Christ? Then, whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I know that you will stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. He can write some long sentences. This is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but you will be saved, and that by God. For it has been granted to you on my behalf of Christ not only to believe on Him, but also to suffer for Him, since you are going through the same struggle you saw I had. I have now, and now here that I still have. So, what if I go on living? What if I do? What am I going to do with my life? What are you going to do with yours? Are you going to go on with the same thing in your box? Well, I'm just going to try to make enough money so when I get to retirement, I can do what I want when I want. Is that it? Is that your determined purpose? What if I die? We just spent a month looking at if I die before I wake. What if I die? What am I leaving behind? What am I taking with me as far as people that I love? Even people that are my enemies. So what if I go on, if you go on without me? Julie and I were on a walk the other day and we were trying to fathom what it would be like if the Lord took one of the other of us and how difficult it would be to continue the existence without the other. And we have several couples that we know that one spouse died and within months the other one died. They just didn't want to go on living without the other one. But what if I die? Are you going to go on seeking the Lord, continuing without me? Well, I would hope so. So what if I suffer? What if you suffer? What are you going to do with it? Become disappointed, disillusioned, grump? Or are you going to be like Paul and rejoice in your sufferings and use the difficulties in your life to demonstrate the life of Christ? Wish I would have wrote that one down. Wish I could do that all the time. Use the difficulties to demonstrate the life of Christ. That's what I want to do. I just don't always succeed at that. But that's what I hope to do, is what I'm determining to do. And I think if you and I practice it, we could actually accomplish it more. So, if you're not ready to die, then you're really not ready to live. If you picked something to put in that box that had eternal value, and you really focused on that, like Paul did, like Timothy did, like so many of the others in the Bible, you'd be ready to die because you'd run the race well. You've competed well. You've finished well. I watched a little bit of the NASCAR race last night. I didn't stay up to watch the end of it. But you know, all that really matters is where you are at the finish. Right? That's what counts. And you want to move and work at such a way through the race that you finish at the front, or as close to the front as you can get. That's the same way with you and I's life. We need to be focused on the finish and make a determined purpose now to set our minds, to set our life towards that. So here's the last thing. So who or what is it you love most? Who or what is it you love most? And if it's a what, change it to a who. And if the who is a human, switch it to an eternal loving God. Work in your life, set a determined purpose to love God more today than you did yesterday. To express His love and experience His love in a way that's better today than it was yesterday. And share that love with others. That's a purpose that no one can restrict. Doesn't matter whether you're sick or healthy, whether you're mobile or you can continue to develop your love for God, with God, and for others. So that's my challenge to you, to set that purpose in your life like Paul had.